here today in the case of Newell versus Department of Corrections, 75913. Are counsel ready to proceed?
Yes.
Please do so and identify yourself for the record and tell the clerk whether you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal.
My name is Emily Buchwald. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Very well. You may begin.
Thank you. We are here today on the appeal of a denial of Mr. Newell's petition for writ of mandamus, which sought an order on behalf of himself and other inmates asking the Department of Corrections to comply with the Administrative Regulation 740 to respond to inmate grievances within the time set forth in the regulation. MDOT's refusal to comply with its own mandatory policy creates real harm to these inmates. They're unable to file lawsuits to challenge the condition of their confinement, and it provides a benefit to the Department of Corrections. They don't need to defend themselves in these lawsuits. The district court abused its discretion when it simply rubber stamped the Department of Corrections' proposed order finding that Mr. Newell was not entitled to relief and that his claims were moot. The order reflects no consideration of the arguments presented by Mr. Newell or the supplemental briefing the Department of the District Court itself requested.
Well, why aren't they moot?
Good question. So I think that there are a couple of reasons that they're not the issue is not moot. First, this appeal is not moot because, as this court has found in Board of County Commissioners versus White, when a case involves an issue of public importance, the case can proceed even if the ruling wouldn't be binding on one of the parties to the action. And I think the administration of the Department of Corrections is fundamentally an issue of public importance. It involves.
Aren't we conflating perhaps mandamus or extraordinary writ relief standards with mootness? I mean, mootness is generally a requirement that the party have skin in the game. It matters to that party. And I recognize we have the capable of repetition yet evading review. But there are cases out there where, more on the federal level, but where the court refuses to predict that somebody is going to violate the law in order to salvage a claim for mootness. And I wonder why we shouldn't apply that here.
Well, as you mentioned, I do think that this falls squarely within the capable of repetition yet evading review standard. Mr. Newell asked for relief both on behalf of himself and other inmates.
It was not a class action,
though. But again, this is a pro se litigant, and so I do think that while he obviously needs to comply with the rules of civil procedure, there is some leeway that must be given to these claims. But because it does fall within kind of the text this court has set forth for the capable of repetition yet evading review, wish there was a shorter way to say that.
What do you interpret that test to require?
Well, so my understanding versus Bish versus Las Vegas Metro Police Department, the harm must be So the duration of the injury must be relatively short, that there has to be a likelihood that a similar harm will continue occur in the future, and the issue must be important. Again, I think that it's undisputed that how a state actor treats its inmates is an issue of public importance. There are multiple federal courts which address this idea that as a state actor, we have to be concerned about these things. The length of the duration is relatively short. Ideally,
it should have been shorter in your estimation.
Yes. I mean, this issue has been ongoing for 2.5 years. And the fact that Mr. Newell was released on parole, obviously, it's not unfortunate for him that he's no longer in custody. But the idea that the Department of Corrections can simply run out the clock and ask for the court go through this entire process, which would moot the claims, would.
Is there anything on the record about how many of these grievances have been filed, how many may be lingering past the determination time that aren't Mr. Newell's?
In the record, there isn't any information about that. Mr. Newell moved on behalf, usually his own grievances as examples.
Right. Those are resolved, right?
His specific ones are resolved, but I do think that we must consider the larger issues here. Under the Prison Litigation Reform Act, only once an inmate can fully exhaust the available grievances can he file a 1983 action to challenge the conditions of his confinement. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned in our reply brief, the Department of Correction regularly moves to dismiss claims for failure to exhaust. So while there isn't any specific information in the record, I don't believe that this is an issue solely confined to Mr. Newell. And in his petition and his reply at the district court level, he states that other inmates are suffering from similar harms, but does not provide any specific.
What do you make of certainly federal authority is pretty clear on it has to be with respect to the party. In other words, the capable of repetition yet evading review doctrine. There's no shorthand for that, I agree with you. That the same person or entity must have that be in his or her future, whereas you're pressing the point that in Nevada you can do it without it being party specific. I don't think our cases are quite that clear. I don't think they're clear one way or the other, and I'd like your thoughts on that, on the party specific requirement for the.
I agree that there isn't a case that in this court that has specifically addressed this room. But I do think, you know, going to Roe v. Wade, even though she was not pregnant at all stages throughout the litigation or throughout the process, the federal Supreme Court still did determine that the harm was capable of repetition yet evading review.
Because pregnancy has a limited time period, right?
Yes. And in this case, Mr. Newell's incarceration was also a limited time frame.
I think there are some people in NDOC for a pretty long time.
Absolutely. But I don't think that having a life sentence should be a condition precedent to having his grievances answered. This has been quite a long process. At the district court level, I don't think that the issues were moot because the claims were still ongoing.
And he was still incarcerated.
He was still incarcerated. Not only was he still incarcerated, and so the district court's decision would absolutely have been binding on Mr. Newell. But because the grievances had not been fully resolved, that he still had the opportunity to appeal them.
So can he file a grievance about the failure to respond to grievances?
It would be a circular process.
Yes.
And I do think part of the mandamus standard is that there needs to be a speedy, efficient remedy to resolve it. I do also think, though, that based on the language in AR 740 that says that they're not inmates aren't allowed to file a suit based to enforce AR 740 would prevent an inmate from being able to file a suit specifically challenging the AR 740 process.
So you don't think that an inmate could bring a DEC relief action that says we want a declaration that they essentially the relief that was sought in the mandamus petition?
I mean, I think the whether or not this is a valid provision, but the AR 740 specifically says that the AR does not create any right, liberty, or property interest or establish any basis for any cause of action against the state of Nevada, its political subdivisions, agencies, boards, commissions, departments.
Right, so it doesn't create like a property interest or a due process.
Right.
Right, at least it says so. Whether that's binding or not is a different issue.
Yes. And so I think that does foreclose the possibility of them bringing a declaratory relief action. And as you noted, an inmate would need to fully exhaust the grievance process in order to file the declaratory relief action.
Your reference to Roe v. Wade was really interesting because that is, I think, a federal case, obviously SCOTUS, that is non-party specific in the way it's articulating the long-named exception to mootness. And I think that's reserved for really extraordinarily
like that case, that kind of constitutional challenge mm-hmm. that involves that. How does this qualify if you're going to divorce it from party specificity under a Roe v. Wade type of exception to the exception?
Well, I do think that the kind of county commissioners versus White, where in that case, I believe the county commission, it involved the processing of a regulation that involved purchasing property. And because the time finished, the time expired and they had to purchase the property, but still there was issues of statutory interpretation that needed to be addressed. I would say that maybe the particular circumstances in Roe v. Wade aren't nearly as specific, right? There are plenty of things that government actors must be done within a certain time frame. The Department of Corrections has determined that this must be done within 60 days, and I think that it does fall within it kind of bridges the gap between the capable of repetition yet evading review and finding that when the issue is of public importance, the court should still address these pending questions.
But certainly since Roe v. Wade, which was 1973, as recently as 2018, the U.S. Supreme Court at least has moved to say a dispute qualifies for capable of repetition yet evading review exception only if, one, its duration is too short, and two, there is a reasonable expectation that the same complaining party will be subjected to the same action again. And then you fall into this issue that your client has been released on parole, so he's not likely to have, the law is not going to predict that he's going to violate parole and be back in prison and
right.
file another grievance. All of his prior grievances have been resolved, as I understand it. Am I wrong about that?
You know, at the time of the district court's order, or actually at the time that the district court, the Department of Corrections filed its opposition, they were not all outstanding. And unfortunately, the record doesn't include an update to that.
Okay, so but from the record, it looked to me like the Department of Corrections processed all of his grievances when it answered the petition that your client filed. Is that correct? Or before they answered?
They attempted to, but rather than responding to the grievances, they rejected them for kind of procedural matters. There was one that had been outstanding for 79 days, and they rejected it because it contained more than one issue.
But that would free him to go on a 1983 action, would it not?
No, it wouldn't.
Okay.
It needs to be a denial, not a rejection. And he still was, at the time of the filing of the opposition, it was still within the time to resubmit the grievance. And my time is up.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Frank Todry II, Senior Deputy Attorney General. I'm here for the respondents. First of all, I'd like to thank counsel for coming on as pro bono in this case. And while it arguably makes our case quite a bit difficult, it also definitely raises the level of jurisprudence in this, makes me up my game a little bit in my own briefing, and provides hopefully some clarification in what can frequently be kind of a vague area of law. And so, may it please the court, I'm here for the Department of Corrections today, and I would say that throughout this case, Mr. Newell has sort of presented a moving target, if you will, of his requested relief, which has made it kind of difficult for the district court, and even here, to pinpoint exactly what Mr. Newell was trying to get out of this case. Initially, there's no doubt he had some outstanding grievances, and his petition for mandamus asked that the First Judicial District issue an order directing NDOC to respond to all of his outstanding and alive grievances. By the time the NDOC responded to this petition, 8 of the 9 had some matter of responses or had been resolved. The last one was indeed resolved by the end of the petition for briefing.
What do you say to her point, though, that they were simply summarily denied, which or rejected, which would not be a denial for purposes of allowing him to proceed with a 1983 claim if he wished?
When an issue is denied for a procedural reason, such as what occurred with several of his grievances, Mr. Newell would be provided a certain amount of time to cure those deficiencies. If he does not attempt to resubmit, then the claim will be deemed abandoned. However, merely being rejected on a procedural deficiency is not an actual rejection on the grievance. And the
so are his grievances still alive, or would they be?
By the time it came up here, none of the grievances were alive. Three of them were fully adjudicated. Mr. Newell actually filed a litigation on one of them. It was a habeas action. The others were essentially abandoned after the procedural responses.
They weren't refiled to fixing those deficiencies?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
From what we can tell on record, Mr. Newell provided a very thorough matrix of his grievances, and the NDOC responded with what they had in that time. And with whatever the court had, the outstanding grievances all appear to have been abandoned. So if there was something that was done after, we don't have that on review.
But the subject of his petition for mandamus was that when he would file grievances, they were not timely processed in compliance with 740?
Yes, Your Honor. And the administrative regulation itself that was active at the time did have a remedy for that. At the informal and first level, if the NDOC does not either request additional time to file a response, or if there's not an outstanding investigation such as investigator general, that's a different department looking at staff misconduct. If there's no request for enlargement of time by the NDOC, the inmate plaintiff has his relief through the administrative regulation because he can simply move on to the next level of appeal.
But there's no similar remedy for level two, is there?
At level two, there's not per se. That one must be responded to. However,
and his point is you would blow him off, right?
No. At the level two, the goal is to have it obviously responded to in a timely manner. However, in lieu of this kind of being a problem that has occurred in other departments of corrections throughout the land, there's federal jurisprudence that can also cure this. Ross B. Blake, and I didn't talk about this in my responsive brief because I didn't think this is where it was headed, but Ross B. Blake is a 2016 Supreme Court case that gives us pretty much the most clear guidance on exhaustion. It's at 136 S. Court 1850. And in that matter, that Supreme Court decision provided directions to plaintiffs for, unusual circumstances that would allow an inmate to bypass, and this was case law during the time of this, that would allow an inmate to bypass the grievance procedure. Essentially,
sort of like some sort of a futility doctrine, effectively?
Exactly, Your Honor. The two exceptions are if a grievance process is too obtuse for an inmate of regular understanding to a reasonable inmate, if the grievance procedure is too obtuse, then they're considered not to have access to the grievance system. Alternatively, if the grievance process does not allow access to the courts, they can simply bypass it. So in this instance, if he's not getting a response 60 days, file a response, I don't want to jump into a hypothetical, but I think that would very much fall within those exceptions. And I know personal experience isn't necessarily something to speak on the record, but I can certainly say I've been on the incorrect end of many of those especially in federal court.
Well, but, like, so that's the point. So this guy, he files, like, several grievances over the years, and it seems like, you know, at least once you get past the informal grievance, every one of them is having not timely responses under the administrative procedure adopted by NDOC. And so he goes and files a case to say, hey, make them comply. And then all of a sudden, okay, we responded to all of yours. Like, so is that, I mean, are they just going to not respond to grievances unless you go file a lawsuit?
You know, this is as I said in the answering brief, this is a difficult issue in that it's kind of a case-by-case basis.
Yeah.
This, you know, the NDOC goes through thousands of grievances, without exaggeration, thousands of grievances a week.
Right.
And so some of them don't go through. Some of them have entirely different lifelines because of needing of new witnesses and what have you. However,
So why don't they just amend the administrative regulation to have a realistic amount of time in there?
And it actually has been.
Okay.
Just a bit after Mr. Newell filed his litigation, the court can take judicial notice that in March of 2017, the NDOC adopted a new administrative regulation, superseding the one active during the time. I can also state that other than perhaps administrative regulations on religion, this is probably the most often rewritten administrative regulation within the Nevada Department of Corrections in order to keep up with very frequently changing case law in both the Ninth Circuit and the Supreme Court, as well as just meeting the demands, meeting the simple administrative demands that the department has.
Well, can you address mootness for me in the context of the remarks you just made? And at this point, he wants to proceed to litigate the lack of response, timely response to when he moved to level two on these grievances. And I may be mistaken stating exactly what he wants, but it's in that neighborhood. And his point is, look, you blew me off the whole time I was incarcerated. I had all these grievances, and I brought a petition for mandamus, and then you finally took action. And he wants some relief for either himself or others, and he wants to proceed on that. He has a mootness problem. If we're under federal mootness doctrine, I don't think he fits Roe v. Wade. I think he fits some more recent case law that has to be party-specific. And for him, he's out on parole. The law is not going to predict that he's going to violate parole, land back in, get a grievance, and have it ignored. But what about the idea that in Nevada, it doesn't need to be party-specific. All it needs to be is capable of repetition, have a short duration, that it can't be resolved in the ordinary course of litigation by the time it expires, and that it be of a public importance. I mean, that there's a way to argue that that's all Nevada requires.
I would argue that, so the district court order had discussed that he did have adequate and other speedy means of relief. And I would think that the answer to this question, not sidestepping this, but the answer to this question lies in those other avenues of relief. During Ms. Buchwald's case, you discussed the declaratory relief, and I think that is actually something that would apply in here. While there's not a private cause of action in and of itself of Administrative Regulation 740, this court and the federal court have frequently heard cases that ask for declaratory relief, talking about the constitutionality of this administrative regulation. As this kind of morphed into a more larger issue as to the adequacy of the reg, there's plenty of examples of inmates or counsel with inmates bringing perhaps First Amendment claims access. For this case, a First Amendment case challenging the access to the court, saying that this AR is unconstitutional because it prevents me from going to the court. There's plenty of Eighth Amendment cases challenging the use of force continuum as unconstitutional.
So your argument would be it wouldn't be evading review because there would be other ways to address it.
Yes, Your Honor. If the problem is the sufficiency of the AR, that's a 1983 challenge saying this AR is not constitutional. This is so obtuse, they delay so much, this is causing me to be unable to access to the courts. That's a violation of my First Amendment rights. So I would put forth that 1983 is actually the correct form if it's a more generalized complaint about the administrative regulation.
Can you comment on your view of Nevada mootness law and whether it's party-specific to trigger the exception to mootness with the long name?
Yes, Your Honor. I would believe that, you know, in lieu of Bish, it does have to be case-specific because while Mr. Newell averred that he was violent on behalf of other inmates and his request for relief was that NDOC have to respond to all future grievances in a timely manner, that kind of order starts getting into too much of a hypothetical. An order asking the Department of Corrections to follow the law can't legally stand. The district court...
Can he litigate on behalf of other inmates?
No, Your Honor. It's not here. I know it's very specific case law that an inmate may not bring... And I can do supplemental briefing, just a one-pager on that, that an inmate may not uphold any kind of 1983 action on behalf of anybody except themselves. It kind of more frequently comes in with family visitation than an issue like this, but that's something I'm happy to do.
I don't need supplemental briefing on it. What I'm trying to do is test Nevada's exception to the mootness doctrine and what are the requirements for it in Nevada. Because I think federal requires the issue that's capable of repetition yet evading review to be party specific. In other words, this same thing's going to happen to this person, this same person in the future. And every time it happens, it runs its course before they can get litigation relief. Your opposing colleague identifies Roe v. Wade as an exception to that federally, and she's absolutely correct on that, I think, as I read that case. But Nevada's kind of unclear on whether we do have that same party requirement, and so I'm trying to have you address that more globally than just the prison context.
So, right, can the exception to the mootness doctrine apply even if it may not happen to this same individual, but if it's happening repeatedly to other inmates in the prison system, is that enough to be capable of repetition yet evading review?
Under Nevada law.
Okay, so I mean...
Thanks.
So, while I still think that, put in that context, that 1983 does address those. However, just going on to the mootness doctrine, I think the nature of these grievances does not lend itself to something that's more policy-based like Roe v. Wade. While we have a general procedure to respond to, each one is handled so differently that I think it's difficult for the district court to go beyond just the grievances that it has in front of it. And the issues of each individual case, because of the variance, because of the different amount of parties, because of the different yards, because of the different responders, different policies invoked. That mootness claim could be addressed, but I would not, regarding the same party, but I would suggest that this is not necessarily the case given the variance in different grievances.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you so much for your time.
And you have 2 minutes and 18 seconds.
All right.
Oh,
gosh, I'm sorry. My colleague mentioned that each case is handled differently, but the point of the administrative regulation is that they shouldn't be handled differently. The administrative regulation specifically sets the time limit for a response to the inmate grievance at 60 days. This isn't a constitutional claim. We're not asking to amend AR 740. We're asking to enforce 740, to ask them that the Department of Corrections comply with the regulations that they deemed fit to respond within a certain period of time. And in the beginning of your questioning of my colleague, you asked some questions about what happened with these grievances. I think going back to the relief requested, one of the things that Mr. Newell did request was an evidentiary hearing because he did identify some of these issues about whether or not the responses were sufficient, whether they were fully, whether they were adequate. So we do ask the court to grant our appeal and remand this case back to the district court for an evidentiary hearing on whether or not the Department of Corrections' conduct was appropriate when it tried to moot all of these claims at the last minute.
If we did that, he's no longer in prison, so what would be the point?
I mean, I think the point is that this is an ongoing issue, that the Department of Corrections concedes that it doesn't always comply with the administrative regulation, and that it hasn't in the past, and that it might not in the future. In all candor, I don't think that this should be a huge request that they comply with their own regulations. I looked through the AR briefly. There is no exception to the 60-day. It's a mandatory time limit, which is exactly what a writ of mandamus is intended to do, is to require a governmental agency to perform a mandatory act. The mandatory act.
So is it a mandatory act, or is it just, you know, guidelines like an employee handbook or something like that?
If you'll permit me a few more seconds to read the actual section, this is 740.07.3, the second level grievance. The time limit for a response to the inmate for the second level grievance is 60 days, not including transmittal time, from the date the grievance is received by the grievance coordinator to the date it is returned to the inmate. There's no exceptions. There's no wiggle room. There is a 60-day requirement to respond to a grievance at the second level.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.